Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to Torture Cast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is Torture Cast.
I will never get tired listening to that. Willie Dills Gregory, who's joining me today, Chad King, on episode 258 of The Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Of course, that was the incredible highlight from Friday night's game against the Milwaukee Brewers, in which the Giants put up six runs off of the elite closer Josh Hader in the ninth inning with three bombs by Bart Ruff and, of course, the walk-off grand slam by Yaz himself. Welcome to the show, Willie, from your car there in the city.
What's going on, man? You came in real choppy there. I just turned my camera off. Hopefully that makes things a little bit better.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, everyone, he's on a cell phone right now, so, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I'm currently in San Francisco moving stuff from one box into another box because, just moved and don't have a home yet, so all my stuff lives in giant boxes, little boxes in a giant box. That was quite a way to end the first half, I think, for the Giants and the Giants fans. We were suffering, and then we take three or four from the Brewers. So now all of a sudden, feeling better, I guess, is the word.
Yeah, winning is the best tonic for anything, right? I mean, since we recorded last, the Giants won five of their last six before the break. So they find themselves five games above 500 at 48 and 43. Yeah, we know the West is probably gone unless they somehow like won every game remaining against the Dodgers. But they're only a half game back of the wild card. And so you got Atlanta, 6.5 up on the Giants, San Diego, 2.5 up, and then Philadelphia and St. Louis, a half a game up right now. So the Giants are right in it. I mean, they got a playoff spot to secure. Second half is going to be key. The starting rotation, and by the way, this is going to be a rather quick show today. Willie and I are kind of busy, but we're definitely going to come here and talk Giants baseball for about a half an hour or so. But one of the things I wanted to bring up is that the Giants starting pitching, which was supposed to be their strength, really tanked in May and parts of June. But right now, July, they lead the major leagues in starters ERA and now have bumped themselves back up to fifth overall for the year in starters ERA. So, nice. I mean, that's a welcome sign. I mean, because that was kind of a big worry, especially with guys like Disco and others going down. Junis going down for a while. So Rodon and Webb, of course, are shouldering the load. But, you know, I have Alex Cobb going 7-plus innings the other day with no runs. I mean, they're really starting to solidify themselves, and this is the perfect time to do it.
Yeah, Wood and Cobb have looked a lot better recently. There's definitely some shaky moments, but you know, it's funny you mentioned that they're now, you know, contending again for one of the better rotations. I just watched a replay of the perfect game, the Matt Cain perfect game, and at the beginning of that game they flashed the stat that Matt Cain had been 6-0 over his last like seven starts or whatever. Bumgarner was 5-0 over his last seven starts, and I can't remember who the other guy was. Who was the third pitcher? It was a third pitcher who was also like 3-0 over his last five. So like they were like absolutely on fire at that point. And the starting pitching really has been, if you think about it, all the times that the Giants have been good, it's always been on the back of starting pitching. It's the way the ballpark plays. It's just the style of baseball that we play here, if it's successful. So yeah, going into the season, that was supposed to be one of our strengths. It had not been. But looks like, yeah, things are starting to turn around. Webb's been absolutely phenomenal every single start. And now it's just a matter of does he get run support or not. And lately he has. So there you go. That turns into wins.
Yeah, I think Sergio brought it up. I was thinking the same thing. Ryan Vogelsong, do you think they mentioned him as the third pitcher?
Vogelsong, that's one, yep.
Yeah, yeah, Vogie had a great year that year, so that's not surprising at all. Yeah, we'll get to the draft in a little bit, but the Giants did take 10 pitchers out of their 20 total picks and 9 pitchers in their first 12. So, I mean, that trend continues. The Giants really value pitching, and so they're going to keep doing that. So, yeah, the Giants had a nice break. They feel good going into the break, feel good coming out. It's going to be tough. They got 8 of their next 12 games are against the Dodgers, 4 at home and 4 in Dodger Stadium starting tonight down at Chavez Ravine. But this is the time that, you know, you got to weigh yourself against the juggernauts of the division and of the league. I mean, you can't avoid them. They got the same balanced schedule. It's an unbalanced schedule, but the same for the other West opponents. But before we talk about that, I want to talk a little home run derby, little all-star game, man. Did you get a chance to see each one?
I did. I watched, I didn't watch the entire of either. I was a highlight man for all this stuff. But yeah. I did get a chance to see the Pujols winning the first round. It was pretty fun, even though he, I guess, beat one of the weaker guys to face. Like, that was, what do you have, like 13 or something like that?
Yeah, I think
that
was
fun. And
yeah,
I did watch. Yeah, and then I did watch the eventual win by Soto, who, it's funny. It's like, this is why I was talking about the home run derby. It's kind of lame that it's this like marathon, because I think it would be better. You know, it's like the guy with the most home runs didn't win, right?
Right.
It was what's
Julio
his name?
Rodriguez.
Who was just crushing the ball. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Soto just comes in at the end and like takes advantage of that guy being completely gassed, right? And then is able to pull it off. Although it was dramatic. Yeah. I enjoyed both. I thought the All-Star Game presentation was pretty fun, miking up all the players and even talking to pitchers while they were pitching. That was interesting and cool, and everybody seemed to be into it. So I had a good time.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. I did see most of the Home Run Derby. I think I missed the first couple of rounds. I did see Pujols sneak in, almost back in that first round. It doesn't matter. I mean, it was kind of cool to see him do that. You know, an old guy still ripping him out of the park, so no issues there. Yeah, you know, Julio Rodriguez, man, this kid, I admit, he's up in Seattle, so he's kind of buried. And, yeah, I see a few highlights here and there, but I've never really followed him. And that dude is very athletic, very lean, but, man, can he tank? He is just – he's got the bat speed, man. And he had the, stamina to kind of outlast most of the players until that last round against Soto. And Soto didn't win it by a ton. I mean, it was a, quote, walk-off, but, you know, he had the extra 30 seconds.
Yeah, walk-off.
Yeah, and it was great, but Julio kind of, you know, he hit, 33, I think, in the first round, and that might have just, you know, kind of killed him for the rest of the night, even though he did win the second round. But that dude can mash, and he, was it Rodriguez that took down Pete Alonso, Polar Bear? I think it was. So that was kind of cool, because, Alonso, I've never seen a player take the home run derby as serious as Pete Alonso. And I love it. I'm here for it, man. Like, it's so cool because, like, growing up, you know, you and I saw obviously a lot of the stars do the home run derby, but even in basketball, the slam dunk competition was legit when it was like Jordan and Spud Webb and Dominique, you know, and those guys.
And Carter, like, took it to the next level. And then we were lucky enough to have Jason Richardson be a Warrior when he was like the guy. Yeah, that was like the fun times of it. And then, yeah, now it feels like an afterthought of the All-Star weekend, which is unfortunate.
It does. And I don't know if it's because you just don't have the marquee guys in there. I mean, you have very athletic guys, obviously. You're playing in the NBA. But it just doesn't have the same pomp and circumstance that it used to. But the Home Run Derby, I think, still has that. I mean, I know a lot of people are like, it's too long. It's too this. It's too that. It's like, well, what do you want them to do? 5 swings and that's it? I mean, you know, you got to have a little stamina element.
I kind of want them to hit. Here's what I propose. I propose they get to hit 10 home runs each, and it's all about distance. Like, you're just trying to hit it the farthest. It's not about, you know what I mean? Like, you just pitch until you've hit 10 home runs. And so, like, on your last one, you're, like, muscling up. So it's almost, in that sense, it's like a long drive competition. Yeah. Have you ever tried to watch the long drive competitions?
Yep.
They basically have a set number of balls they're going to hit, and then they just take the longest one, right? And they do rounds, so it is like, you know, it'll be like five guys going at a time, and the top guy from that heat will advance, and then you have like a finals of two players. I just think, like, the problem is I don't think the right guy ended up winning. Like, definitely Rodriguez was the most impressive, right? I mean, that guy was just, like you said, sure, he was just pumping them out one after another, too. It was like he would hit like five, six in a row, and they were all like bombs. So, like, to me, it's like, yeah, you just end up punishing that guy because, yeah, he hits 30 something in the first round, and then you're like, okay, now be Juan Soto, who like squeaked by his first two rounds and is looking a lot more fresh. I don't know. Yeah. And it's fun to just watch them go far, right? So maybe like have them swing less, but just swing as hard as you can, you know, every single time. Because they start to do this thing where you notice like players, they're like, they're just trying to like pull it over the left field wall or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Like they're not necessarily mashing the ball. And I know they're doing the thing where they're rewarding them with extra time for home runs over like 440 or whatever. So you want to hit a few bombs, but after two, it doesn't matter anymore, right? So I don't know. It's the whole thing to me feels a little...
Take a three-quarter swing. Just get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just funny because what's the idea behind a home run derby, right? Watch gigantic home runs. You know what
true.
I mean?
True. Yeah. That, you don't want fence scrapers kind of all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought it was funny, though, too. You mentioned taking it seriously. Apparently, nobody's ever won it three times in a row, and Alonso was going for that.
Yeah.
But Griffey has won it three times, three total.
Correct.
Times.
Just not three in a row. Yeah.
Yeah. So Alonso was trying to join that vaulted company, which Griffey was one of the guys who took it pretty seriously. And Bonds took it seriously when he was in there a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like it's cool to see somebody really like going like, this is my thing. I win the home run derby. I like that. You know?
Yeah. 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 Did you ever watch those old classic home run derby matchups from the 50s in the black and white where it was like Harmon Killebrew and Willie Mays?
Oh, jeez.
Dude, I'm sure they're all on YouTube right now. In fact, I know they are.
Yeah.
They are fantastic. First of all, super chill. It was always at some like minor league park somewhere, right? And they'd have one dude behind a microphone in the dugout. And he'd be like, hi, I'm Joe whatever, and we're here at whatever park. And we have a home run derby between Willie Mays and Harmon Killebrew. How are you today, Willie? And it was like this really quiet, pleasant conversation. It was like, okay, well, your turn is up. And then, okay, I'm going to go hit now. And it was it was like a traditional baseball game.
Golf broadcast, yeah.
Oh, it was totally like that. There were no fans at all, right? It was just an empty park. And so I cannot remember if it was five innings, seven innings. I don't think they did nine innings. But the way they did it was three outs, just like a normal inning. So anything besides a home run was an out. And so you just hit the top of the first and the bottom of the first, the top of the second, the bottom of the second. So you'd alternate that way. And so, you know, you'd get, you know, Willie hitting like three in an inning and suddenly, you know, the score 7-4. And I don't know. I love that format. It was really chill and kind of fun. And I don't think – I'm not advocating for that for national TV and at nighttime. I just want to bring that back at like at some point, just like a celebrity golf tournament or something like that. You know, just you know, have you know, Julio Rodriguez against Juan Soto in that format. Like, how many can you hit in each inning, and you get a small break while the other guy
hits. Yeah, I mean, I like that too because you know this is the other thing. They give them like 2 minutes now. It used to be 10 outs. Remember that?
Yes.
So it's like every time you didn't hit one out, it was an out.
Yep.
And then they would just go until they were out of pitches, basically. Getting more frequent breaks is probably good because, and this is kind of what I think too. It's like maybe go up and just hit five out, and then you're done, and then you can come back and hit five more out. And it's like I said about distance. I just think it's too much of an endurance contest more than a power contest, right?
Yeah,
and this is, again, the thing I think is keeping people away from it is the fact that nobody wants to get winded when they're having a potential 3 days off in the middle of a 162-game grind, you know? I think it would be more enticing to the players if you made it a different style of competition. Speaking of celebrities, by the way, you mentioned the celebrity golf thing. I thought the celebrity softball game was like the funnest event of the whole weekend.
Yeah, I only saw highlights of that. I did not see the whole thing.
So I was like, I actually just found it live because apparently it was just on YouTube. I had no idea. They, like you were mentioning, they were going to, they scheduled it to broadcast like later, but it was just live on YouTube. And this was like on like Thursday or Friday or something. This is like, there was still regular baseball going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I tuned in, and I tuned in right as Hunter Pence hit his first home run, and he pulled off his shirt and showed the Giants shirt underneath, which was awesome, in Dodger Stadium. And then I saw him hit another one, and like it was, I mean, it was freaking awesome, dude. It was hilarious.
I love that though. He was pulling open his shirt, just showing his SF, because he got the team jerseys were freaking like Brooklyn and LA, and I was like, oh, Brooklyn God, and that LA, yeah, sucks.
I don't know where Brooklyn. Oh, it was supposed to be because of Brooklyn Dodge. Okay, yeah, now yeah, I get it. Holy crap, that just like did not.
Wow, that took you a while.
Yeah, well, I wasn't really paying attention to it. I was just like, okay, yeah, whatever. Okay, that makes sense. So yeah, it was like I saw on his Instagram, because I follow him there, that he had posted like, it was like a before and after him like going into his like trailer and coming out and showing that he had the Giants. And then when he pulled it out, I was like, hell yeah, dude, that's awesome. Like Hunter, he's just such an enjoyable guy, dude. It was just really good to see him swing a bat again, you know? And it was a lot of fun. I always like find them a little cringy, like the celebrity basketball game and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But this was actually pretty entertaining. So
I would
job.
Love to
good
play
job,
one
MLB.
Of those games. I guess we have to be a celebrity first, but you know.
Yeah, you need to get famous first. So, well, you don't have to get that famous, actually. In fact, I think it's best to not get too famous. You need to be.
They were introducing some of the players, and I was like, oh my God, I'm officially old. I'm officially old. I do not recognize more than half of these quote celebrities. I had no idea.
You don't know who Judge Siwa is?
No, I don't.
I would think as someone who has a daughter, you might know who she is. No. She's like a YouTuber, and then she was like on a reality show at one point. Too young for your daughter.
Yeah, yeah, is this the girl with the pulled back hair and everything?
No, she had like short blonde hair.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
I don't know.
She was like on like Dance Moms or something. It was one of those shows where it was like moms who take their little kids to like dance competitions, and the moms are crazy. And she was the little kid. Yeah. Here's the other thing that was hilarious, though. Bad Bunny is, I didn't realize how freaking famous and loved he is. Did you know? Like,
so
did you see when he?
I'm just
he
telling
came
you.
Up for his at-bat and people
that's
like
another
crying.
One. Like, I'm like, just I. The first time I even heard the word Bad Bunny was about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So okay. When he was like fully in, and I kind of looked him up, and I'm like, okay, again, I'm social media. I watch TV. I listen to that. I've never heard of this guy. Like, but apparently he's like huge. I'm like, who is this guy?
He's massive. Yeah. He's like a massive Latin American music star. Yeah. And it was funny. When he came up for his at bat, they were showing like fans in the stadium and people, it was like them seeing like Michael Jackson or something.
God,
you know what I mean? Like
so
people were
weird,
like
man.
Crying and like losing their minds that he was like doing something in front of them.
He's breathing.
Hilarious.
He's in front of me.
Yeah.
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 Frick, man. I don't get it. Circling back, I actually did find, here's season one, episode one, and I know you're on your phone, you probably can't see this, of the Classic Home Run Derby. It was filmed the last 3 weeks of December of 1959 and ran from January to July 1960, so that's it. But season one, episode one, was Mickey Mantle versus Willie Mays, so I'm going to play just a little bit of it here.
Inside the plate.
Well, that settles that. Willie, come on in. Welcome to Home Run Derby.
Thank you, Ma.
Willie, you can only hit one way. You're right-handed. Will it make any difference whether the pitcher is right-handed or left-handed?
No, it doesn't, Mark. When I'm hitting good, I hit like anybody, righty or lefty.
Well, that just proves that they're great ball players. You probably want to know what the prizes are. The winner, the one who gets the greatest number of home runs, gets $2,000.
Whoa!
The loser has the consolation prize of $1,000.
$2,000!
But as an additional bonus, if you hit three consecutive balls out of the ballpark in fair territory, it will be worth $500 to either one of you. Now, if you get the fourth one in a row, it's another $500. For every additional home run that you hit after that, an additional $1,000. Now the pitchers are out there to get the ball over the plate where you can hit.
I mean, they're batting. To be fair, though, back then, that was a lot of money, I'm sure.
Oh, no, it was. So, see, here's yeah. Mickey Mantle sitting down.
Here we are, the top of the first
inning. And here's the top of the first, Willie Mays.
line drive out into left field. And so
this,
it is
this had nothing to do with the All-Star game at all. It was just like an extra thing.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah, this is in the offseason. They did it December down in L.A.
High pop-up, out of play. That'll be one out.
So anyway, I thought that was cool. For those of you who have never seen this before, I used to watch this religiously as a kid. Obviously, I was not born in 1959, but it was so much fun watching these old guys do this. It was fantastic. I think there's Ernie Banks and Harmon Killebrew and a bunch of other, you know, Hall of Famers in here. So it's pretty cool to see them yak them out of the park. Pretty neat. All right.
By the way, the actual All-Star game was entertaining only really because of the miking of the pitcher and stuff like that. But the game itself, I mean, there's some scoring up front, and then it just was like nothing happened. 3-2.
So American League had won 8 in a row coming into this game, and when the National League got up 2-0 real quickly, I mean, you know, you're like, well, it's probably not going to hold. But I was like, hey, at least it's a good start, because, of course, I was pulling for the National League. But I tell you what, if the National League is going to lose, then I'm going to pin it on a Dodger, and that's exactly what happened.
That freaking their starting pitcher gave up all the runs.
Tony Gonsolin
was having a phenomenal. Yep. He's having a phenomenal first half. Like, what is he, like 11-0 or something like that?
He's 11-0. Ironically, he gets the loss in the All-Star game. 11-0, a sub-2 ERA, just an absolutely insane season, and he allowed like 4 or 5 hits in his one inning of appearance, including 2 bombs. So
He was the back-to-back jacks, right? Yeah, Stanton, and then Stanton's was crazy because it looked like he didn't even swing at the ball.
Oh,
it
dude,
was like
that
a
guy.
Flick of the wrist almost.
Him and Aaron Judge.
The next guy like mashed it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Tony Buxton. He but that ball was, 6 to 8 inches above the zone? I mean, he tomahawked it. And I remember they panned over to the dugout, and in the background, Shohei Ohtani is, like, laughing with another teammate, and his eyes are wide open, and he's, like, motioning the tomahawk motion. He's like, oh, my God, can you believe that he did that? Because he caught – you know, he's not throwing particularly hard. It was a 93-mile-an-hour fastball. But I mean, you try to hit a 93-mile-an-hour fastball that's, like, at your chest, you know?
At your
chest
head, height. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, so he just tomahawked that shit out.
That was a pretty cool moment, too, when Shohei Ohtani gave the pregame interview, and he was like, first pitch – first swing or whatever, and then he hits the first pitch for a base hit over the second baseman. I was like, that was pretty awesome, calling a shot like that. That was pretty sweet.
And then he promptly gets
picked off. Like you said, it's like, man, it's frustrating as a National League fan just watching this just get owned. Apparently, though, the National League still, in the history of the All-Star game, has more victories than the American League.
Yeah, it's the National League crushed.
53-50 or something like that.
Yeah, the National League crushed the American League for so many years, but...
Yeah. And they used to have... This is funny. They used to have no home run derby and no all this other stuff, but just 2 baseball games. They played 2 All-Star games.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Like in Willie Mays' autobiography, he talks about it all the time because he played in like 22 All-Star games.
So that's why, like, all those old guys have so many crazy. They're like, yeah, he played in 24 All-Star games. Like, how is that? He only played 20 years. And then you look it up.
What?
And you're like, oh, they had 2 All-Star games back then.
Yeah.
It's for a certain point in time. So, okay, I get it. So kind of like artificially
so
raises their numbers, yeah.
It's so odd to me. Like, who chose 2? Why didn't they play, like, a series? Why didn't they play a 3 games if they're going to play more than 1? Do you know what I mean? Like, just playing 2 seems so weird.
Yeah.
But whatever. I don't know. If I was in the room when they were deciding that, I would have said, how about 3? If we're going to do more than 1, how about 3? And then you got an actual, like, American League versus National League series, you know?
Okay, so I've got the official count, and actually you're a little off on the AL-NL wins. The American League has now won 47 All-Star games. The National League has won 43, and there have been 2 ties.
What?
Yeah, 47 to 43.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And the American League has outscored the National League 381 to 374. So they've scored 7 more runs in the National League over 92 games. That's pretty sweet, man. I like that. They've won 9 in a row. National League had a little 3-game winning streak, and before that, American League had won 7 in a row. No, so 7 in a row, a tie, and another 5 in a row before that. So, my Lord, since 1996.
Yeah, it's been a while.
That's it. So 96, National League won, 6-0. Since then... The National League only won in 10, 11, and 12. That's it. American League has won every other game except for one tie since 1996. That's freaking insane, dude.
One of those.
Come on, Ashley, pick it up.
One of those years was the Giants year, right? Was that 12?
It was 12 when Milky Cabrera was MVP.
Yeah, the Giants basically beat the American League all by themselves. Yeah.
Panda had a double off of who else? Verlander. That was a sign of things to come like 4 months later off of Verlander. Yeah, that was probably the best All-Star game a Giants fan will ever see. Because Matt Cain also started that game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Matt Cain started. So that's Milky win the MVP and Panda do well.
Yeah. When I think back on like my lifetime of watching the All-Star game, it's like, what's the memorable stuff? It's like Atlee Hammaker like melting down in the All-Star game and stuff like that. Yeah. When I was a kid. I don't have a lot of great memories. So that was a fun year. That was a good one. Watch three Giants do well in the All-Star game.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so right before the All-Star game, Juan Soto purportedly rejected a 10-year contract or offer from the Washington Nationals worth $440 million. So that has started the rumor mill, and of course Washington said that they will start entertaining trade offers, and there are about seven teams linked to potential trades, and of course it's always going to include the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Mets, a few others, but the Giants are also mentioned in that conversation. Now, I in no way in this realm, I know that the Giants did actively pursue Giancarlo Stanton and Bryce Harper, but ultimately didn't offer a big enough deal to either one of them to convince them to come over. But how in the world would the Giants, A, come up with enough for this, or B, want to do this? I mean, they would have to give up half of their farm system plus guys like Logan Webb. I mean, to even be remotely close to this trade offer. And to you, Willie, I mean, if it was a package like that where you had Ramos in there and Logan Webb and a whole bunch of other minor leaguers, is that worth it to you to bring in a guy like Soto and everyday kind of every family member kind of no name? Or is this something like, no, Giants need to stick with their current, you know, formula right now?
Well, I'd love to watch Soto be in a Giants uniform for like a decade. I would love that. The guy's 23 and he's just, you know, he's an absolute superstar. If we have to give up Logan Webb though, I think you hurt the team too much. We can't really recover from that. If it's not though, if it's Luciano and Ramos and, you know what I mean? If it literally is just all the farm system plus some picks, then sure. But I can't imagine Washington, somebody else is going to offer up more than that.
Yeah.
Right? That's the issue. Like, I don't think the Giants have the name I've seen the most people saying makes a lot of sense is the Cardinals. Apparently they have a lot of resources to give up. I think the Dodgers also, it's like, I'll never not think the Dodgers are going to get it done because they just seem to.
They're just always there, man. Yeah.
But it's like, it's just, if that happens, it's ridiculous because they just did it with Mookie Betts, right? They literally just did this.
Yeah.
To get like the biggest name in the game, right? So if they do it again, that's just ridiculous. But I as a Giants fan, a longtime Giants fan, I never ever think it's actually going to happen, right?
Yeah.
The Barry Bonds thing wasn't a trade, it was just like a signing, right? And that was a huge deal. But that's the last time I could really think that the Giants like just went out to get a guy, and that had to have all the things in place. It had to be named Barry Bonds. He had to be the son of a super famous Giant and be a superstar for that to like end up coming together.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't see it, man. Honestly, I'd rather let's sign Jock for another few years and go after, you know, somebody who's a right-handed power bat that we don't have to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That I think makes more sense.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you on that one. You know, the interesting thing is a lot of people go, well, I don't understand. His contract expires this year, so why don't they just wait and sign him? Well, no. Washington is motivated to get something out of him because they're not going to get anything if they let him just the contract expire, right? That's it. So they're going to try and get something out of him before August 2nd. Now, that said, all the teams who are interested know this. So they know that Washington also can't demand the ultimate king's ransom either, right?
They can certainly demand him under contract for multiple years. But it is true the Giants can just try to get him next season wherever he goes. But the issue is a lot of teams are thinking if they're the team that signs him, they essentially have the inside track. Or the team that trades for him, they have the inside track.
Yes, and that's the other thing, is that just because you trade for him, mm-hmm. doesn't mean you have him next year. You could give up all of your top talent in the farm system.
And then watch him walk away.
And then watch him walk. And that would be the ultimate just, oh, crap. Yeah. You know, that is not going to be a good thing.
I would rather the Giants just try to make a play for him next season. I think that's... Because to me, it's like, are we even in a position right now? Like, if we did give up Logan Webb right now and add Juan Soto, does that make us a team that makes the playoffs and then wins?
Yeah.
Just with this one guy? I mean, we saw Barry Bonds never win the World Series, right?
Absolutely.
We saw that. Yeah. We watched it happen.
Yeah, for 15 straight years. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, once in baseball, you know, you can't walk LeBron James, you can't walk Stephen Curry, but you can walk Juan Soto if you really want to. So, you know, you can walk Barry Bonds. It's one of nine guys. So to me, it's like you can't look at the Angels. They got the two best players in baseball, and they're horrible.
Absolutely, that's a great point right there. I honestly feel bad for Mike Trout. That dude is like.
Yeah.
The top five player every single year, and he just puts on a smile and goes out and does his job. But you gotta think internally. He's like, son of a bitch, man. When is this team ever gonna be good?
He has zero
playoff appearances. Zero.
Yeah.
What the hell?
He's never gonna have like his playoff moment. You know what I mean? Unless the Angels completely figure this out and rebuild and figure, you know, and they have to get it done so quickly. Because you think about it, he's been around a while now. It's like, you know, you think of him as like a guy who's going to be here forever, but he's not going to be here forever. He's not going to be this guy forever either. And I don't know if Shohei is going to be there in a couple years. So, in fact, I doubt he is. So,
oh, me too. I think he's one of those guys with his agency. They're going to be like, okay, we're like the hottest player right now. I mean, the dude is like. There was a discussion I saw on social media going like, I'm sorry, Barry Bonds fans, but Shohei Ohtani is better. And of course, you know, it was a flame. It was just like trying to get people like riled up. And you got all these people going, what the blah, blah. And some people going, well, actually, when you consider his pitching, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was just a fun discussion that I was reading about. Like, it didn't take it too seriously. But I mean, that is the level that Shohei is at. I mean, we have not seen anyone in baseball do this since Babe Ruth. No one. Right?
Yeah.
So he is a very special breed. So is he as good of a hitter as Barry Bonds? No, not right now, but he's not that far below. But then when you add in his pitching statistics and he's in the top tier of pitchers as well, then you're like, well, Barry Bonds couldn't do that.
Although we never saw him try.
That's very true. Wouldn't put it past him, right?
Yeah. But the thing is about Barry, though, is like what he was doing at the height of his power was never ever done, like even come close to.
No.
You know, just being on base more than 50% of the time you come to the plate is just ridiculous. Yeah. And he did that forever, right? I mean, like 200 walks or whatever every year. It's like, what? Like, huh? Doesn't make sense. And you know, you remember, like, we remember very well. There was a time where it was like, if you even tried to throw a pitch by him, like, it just wasn't going to happen. Like, you had to walk him because we saw, like, the best pitchers in baseball were like, okay, I'm going to take this dude on. And he'd be like, nope, sorry. Treat him like little kids. You know what I mean? So, to me, like, no one's ever going to be a better hitter. No. But, yeah, we could talk about all around, I guess.
Yeah, all around. That's all. It was an interesting discussion. But, yeah, he's going to be an extremely valuable free agent here. I think in 2 years.
Here's the interesting thing about Shohei, though. I find it almost like the Debo Samuels thing where it's like, how long can he be a pitcher and a DH? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, do you really think that somebody's body can do this for the next 10 years? You know, it's like at some point, I think he's going to have to probably stop pitching, right? Because I can't imagine I mean, if you've ever thrown like a full game of baseball, or even just, you know, 5-6 innings, the next day your arm feels like absolute ass. Like it feels like it's going to fall off your body a little bit, you know?
Oh yeah,
because you're doing significant damage. I just, and then to go out there and have to be in the lineup, you know, that's just, have to run the bases, do all that. That's, to me, it's like, it's going to wear him down quickly.
Well, speaking
of, or maybe he's inhuman, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There's something in the genetics. He's also a big dude, man. He's actually really, really big. And he does take care of himself. He has a legendary kind of self-care program, I guess. And he's got a lot of people on his team that help him out with that. But he's young, you're right, and it could be in 2 or 3 years. It's like, yeah, his arm starts breaking down. And that's the other thing. It's like the Angels certainly are exposed to the potential of him injuring his, let's say, his rotator cuff while pitching, right? And even if it doesn't require Tommy John, it's just kind of a six-week thing. How does that affect his day-to-day play? Can he still DH, right? Yeah. Is it going to affect his swing? So, like, you could get a pitching injury, and it takes you out of everything. Or you get a hitting injury, same thing, right? You're out of pitching, so it's...
Yeah, it's like you lose two players if he goes down, you know what I mean? Which is nuts to think about. I will actually... This is an interesting question. If you had to pick between him or Soto, who would you rather have? The Giants just magically land one of those guys next, you know, in the next year or two. I kind of think Soto, personally, because like I said, I don't think that Shohei can keep this up forever.
Yeah.
And Soto's 23 and looks like he's going to do this for a long time. Yeah, he's going to get scarier as he goes on.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, his prime is still like 3-4 years away. I mean, he's not even there yet. So he's going to put up some scary numbers if he stays healthy. There's no doubt about that. So I do think that Soto has the potential to be a slightly better hitter than Shohei. It's just that you're right. How long will Shohei pitch and at that level? If he did for another 5 years, I would take Shohei. But if that tapers off, then I got to go with Soto. But you don't have a crystal ball, so you got to make a call. So that's a good question. Speaking of two-way players, the Giants took a two-way player for their number one pick, number 30 overall. It was Reggie Crawford from University of Connecticut. He's a left-handed pitcher and a first baseman. He can throw 99-100. But he hasn't played much recently. In fact, he's only got like 8 innings of pitching at the collegiate level because he did have Tommy John surgery this year. He can hit tanks. He hit 17 tanks in 2020. But he's now committed to the University of Tennessee, which was before the draft. So it's going to be interesting because now they actually have to sign him because of the slot bonus is like $2.7 million. So he's already updated all of his social media with a Photoshop of him in a Giants uniform. So, you know, it seems like every indication is that he's going to sign with the Giants. But I've heard both sides of the coin from the, quote, experts, which they use that term loosely, going like, yeah, this guy is a stud. The Giants might have been a little aggressive in getting him that early, but it was worth it. And other people are like, dude, he's not even in my top 100. What the hell are the Giants doing? The guy's got Tommy John. He's only got 8 innings of collegiate pitching experience. This is a flyer that's going to bomb out on him. So I don't know enough to know, but I've watched a lot of video highlights. First of all, the guy is built like a Giancarlo Stanton. He is very tall, and he's got those like coat hanger shoulders, man. Super wide, thick thighs. Like he is a beast. He is a big dude. So you wonder about, you know, pitchers aren't usually built like that, you know? So I don't know if that's really going to last on him. But hey, if he's just a first baseman slash power hitter, you know, I don't think they could go wrong with that. I agree. No, maybe it was a little too early for the first pick, but maybe they thought they'd lose him before they could get around on the second round. So,
yeah, sounds fine. I think the whole Tommy John thing is just not even really a thing anymore. It's like every pitcher just gets that. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like get it as early as you can and then get it out of the way because your elbows aren't supposed to do what pitchers do with them. So, you know, you put that cadaver elbow in there and you go on about your business. And it's, you know, it's just what you do. So I don't care about that. I love the idea of just picking physical specimens and then trusting that your coaching staff knows what to do with them. Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a great approach to the draft.
No, he's a big dude. So, I think overall a good draft. 9 players, like I said, out of the first 12 were pitchers, 10 out of the 20 overall. Just on a personal note, I didn't know the guy, but he's a Gilroy native, went to Christopher High School where my daughter goes. He was the Giants' 16th pick, 496 overall. Andrew, I think it's Cakel. He's a Gilroy native that went to my daughter's high school. He hit over 300 for Fresno State, and he grew up a huge Giants fan and starred here in Gilroy. So a lot of people I know in Gilroy know him extremely well. One of my friends' daughters is dating him. So like, there's all those kind of connections. And so there's a lot of people here locally that are extremely happy that he was drafted by the Giants. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how someone like that goes. But what's funny is that, I shouldn't say funny, what's sad, really, you look back at every draft the last like 5, 6, 10 years, right? And the overwhelming majority of these guys, you know, even if they had promise back when they were drafted, just don't make it ever, right? They languish in the minor leagues for 5, 6 years at the most, and then they go on with life. They never even sniff the majors, let alone make AAA. So I think everyone keep that in the back of their minds.
Russell Wilson, if you're a guy who can play another sport, they usually choose the other sport because baseball is hard, man. You got to toil in the minor leagues, no matter how. That's what's crazy when you look at a guy like Juan Soto, Bryce Harper. You know, it's like they're very rare individuals who basically jump that system and just go right into the big leagues and make an impact. It's baseball's a very difficult sport.
Yeah, Kyler Murray is the same thing. He was a high draft pick by the A's.
Yeah, Kyler Murray, that's right. Yep.
And he was like, he actually said, I love baseball more. I would love to play baseball, but I don't
but have... But I love money more than that.
I don't have a guaranteed future in baseball, like you just said. He could toil around in the minor leagues for 4 or 5 years. And by then, maybe his NFL prospects have really dwindled. So he's like, well, shit. I know I can be a starter, like... next year in the NFL. So I'm going to do that. You know, it's a job for some of these guys. I mean, yeah, he still likes football, but it's not his number one passion. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, but yeah, I was looking back at kind of the history of the Giants draft and so many names from like 2017, 2016, 2015, 2014 out of their, you know, top 20 picks, never even heard of them. Right. Didn't even make it anywhere in the leagues.
This is one of the reasons why I don't really pay that much attention to the baseball draft, because it's just
kind of hard.
You just collect a bunch of guys, you stock up your farm system, and you just see what happens. You know,
it's exactly
most of the guys who end up actually making it don't come through that system necessarily. Yeah. It's a very rare, but you think we have done pretty well. I mean, you got like your Belts and your Posies and your whatever. It's like, you know, it's not like we haven't had these names. It's not really where the majority of your baseball team is going to come from year after year.
Yeah. All right, just a quick update on injuries. Jose Alvarez, unfortunately, is out for the year. That was kind of a blow. That dude has been pretty nails into his last few appearances.
Yeah.
Mauricio Yovera, 15-day IL, grade 2 right flexor strain. Of course, Casale is still out with the oblique. And Zach Littell on the 15-day IL starting last July 9th, so he'll be coming off soon. And then Brandon Crawford's kind of like a day-to-day knee bruise thing. The MRI was negative, so that's good news. But, he had an all-star campaign last year. And I know the Giants signed him to that two-year extension. It's not working out for him this year. You know, it's just...
Yeah, hitting-wise, he's still amazing defense, but
But, you know, one of the guys was bringing it up, the point at the All-Star game, and it's like you see these All-Star lineups, and you're like, oh, wow, these are the best hitters in the major leagues, and you're like, wait, that dude's only hitting like 235, and he's an All-Star?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way the league has transitioned over, you know, the last 10, 15 years. As we've talked about this ad nauseum, but just, you know, it's... launch angle or strikeout. That's it, baby. Like, hit it over the fence. Well, it was funny.
Again,
don't matter.
Watching that Matt Cain perfect game, and Melky was hitting like 367 or something like that at that point in the season. And I'm like, who's hitting 367 anymore? Like, that doesn't happen. What the frick? He was hitting like 420 against lefties or something ridiculous. You're right. Yeah, we just like Jock Peterson is an all voted in, and then he comes up and they show stats. He's like hitting 247. You're like, okay, that's a little awkward for an all-star, but yeah, you're right. And Brandon Crawford is stuck to his guns as far as how he changed things. And you know, it's just I think the league is adjusted back to him, and he hasn't been healthy. So,
yeah,
all that leads to a little bit of a down year. I still feel okay with 2 years.
I do too.
Unless Luciano was supposed to be ready this year or next, then you needed somebody to be there, and I like Crawford a lot. So I think 2 years was the right amount of time, and then hopefully if Luciano isn't traded off for somebody in the bigs, then hopefully he's ready in a couple years.
I just wanted to look real quick, and, you know, I always remember looking at the box scores in the paper and always looking up the stats, right? Where's Will Clark? Where are these guys in the stats or whatever? I just looked up the National League stats for qualified players. There are only 8 players at 300 or above. That's it.
Wow.
8.
That's crazy.
That's insane, dude. I mean, you got so many players in the major leagues. And let's see, in the American League, it's a little bit more. We got 13 players hitting 300 above. But no one higher than 338 in the American League, and no one higher than 330 in the National League. So,
I mean, I can't remember when, like, the Giants would have, like, 3 guys over 300.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Like, just on a team, there would be more than one guy. Now it's just like, who's over, like, 270? Is anybody over 270? Like, no.
Yeah, I think really. The new Mendoza line has got to be about 170 now, not 200.
Well, yeah, apparently you can, like, be an MVP and then not hit 200 for an entire season.
Exactly.
So. Yeah. And then you're still in the starting lineup come playoff time.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up here. First of all, we got to get back to our classic segment. Eric and I did this the last couple of times, but Willie, putting it on you right now on the spot, why are we going to win it all?
We're going to win it all because our starting pitching is going to finally gel, and then we're going to make one solid move that's not Juan Soto at the trade deadline. I think it'll be a couple. I think we get a bullpen guy. Maybe pick up a pitcher and potentially a bat. But these will not be massive. There will be no gigantic names as part of that. But it doesn't matter because the three top guys in our starting pitching, and I believe that Cobb has actually moved into that slot over Wood, are going to stay strong for the second half.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we win 3 out of 5 most of the time, we'll get there, I think. So we're, like you said, we're only a half a game back. And then once we're in the playoffs, then it's a crapshoot, baby.
Crapshoot. Anything could happen. We are simpatico, and we did not share notes or anything, but I was thinking the same exact thing. Farhan is going to have a series of microtransactions, if you will. It's not going to be a blockbuster. Yeah.
He's a gamer.
It's not going to be Juan Soto. He is going to add one or two bullpen arms. A sneaky starter is going to somehow show up, and a utility guy. And everyone's going to shake their head, going, "This is going to do it for. This is going to do it for us." And it's going to be the next Marco Scudero, right?
Yep.
It's
Scudero, the Ryan Terrio.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We got to be that sneaky guy who comes in and just gets the clutch hit.
That's what it's going to be, baby. It's just going to be, oh, man. Or maybe there'll even be a blocked pickup of a DFA. Like, what's his face? Oh, my God. I can't remember. They blocked him from the Padres. Anyway, in 2010.
Cody
Ross. Cody Ross.
Jesus.
Yeah,
Cody Ross. Thank you.
Yeah, and he was only picked up to so he wouldn't go to the Padres because the Giants were right in front of the Padres.
Then he became, like, our best hitter in the playoffs.
And then he was, like, mashing off the Phillies and was – that was just insane, man. So that's the voodoo magic that sometimes happened to the Giants in that run. So, all right, coming up, the Giants start tonight with 4 down in L.A. versus the dreaded Dodgers. You know, obviously minimum split, but if you could take 3 out of 4, hey, the Giants swept the Dodgers last time in 3 games, so they got to keep up that momentum.
That feels like a lifetime ago, but that did happen.
I know.
I remember that.
It did happen, and yet they'll lose to, you know, the Pirates. Whatever. It is what it is. Then
3 out of 4 against the Brewers. The Brewers are good, man.
Oh, that was fantastic, man. And especially because they lost the first game in extra innings. Yeah. And so you kind of had that feeling again, like, here we go again, the one-run loss. Because, you know, whatever, they're 10 and 19 in one-run games, right? Something like that. And so you're like, crap, here we go again. And then the Friday night game, same thing. You're like, all right, they're down by 2 in the ninth. This game's over. And boom, it just spun around. And then Saturday, they came back and won that game. And then Sunday, they won that game. So,
By the way, that comeback in the ninth inning, that apparently was a historic blown save. He got one out and gave up, what, 5 runs?
Six runs total.
Yeah. So his ERA for that outing was like 168 or something like that.
You know what? You're right.
Doubled his season ERA in that one outing.
You're right. You're right. Because Joey Bart and Ruff went back to back, and then there was a single, a walk, and a single. But there was one pop up in the mix. So there was only one out when Yaz hit his.
He got one out, and he gave up six runs, and and they were. They were only down three, so give up six. Like, what? It was like, yeah, historically bad, apparently. Apparently, it might be the worst blown save in the history of baseball.
Well, and to kind of double down on how bad it was in terms of six earned runs in one third of an inning, inflating his ERA, right? So he gave up a couple of bombs against Minnesota that raised his ERA over two, and then now it's over four. Because of the Giants' appearance. Now, what's interesting is on social media, everyone's just absolutely demolishing Tyler Rogers lately, right? Oh, my God, here he comes. He gave him another run, whatever. Well, overall, he's got like a 4-4 ERA. Him and Josh Hader have the same ERA. So I'm just going to say that. I'm just going to say that right now. They have the same. So if you're going to think that Tyler Rogers is as good as Josh Hader, I would say no. But if you think he's one of the worst pitchers in the league, that's also not true, too. They're somewhere in between. And I had responded to a couple of social media posts saying, "Dear Fred Rogers, blah, 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 blah." And Eric and I don't know if I've talked to you about this before, but when you look at his metrics on Baseball Savant, you look at exit velocity, barrel percentage, and all those physics. I know a lot of people get pissed off and like, that's not real baseball. Well, no, it is, because it tells you how well other players are hitting the ball. Exit velocity and barrel percentage is a huge, two huge metrics of that. Just how hard are you hitting it, right? And his barrel percentage and exit velocity are just as low as they've been his entire career. You look at a guy like Jake McGee, his exit velocity and barrel percentage are through the roof compared to his career averages. So that was a clear sign that people were just tanking his balls. Well, that sounded sexual. But Tyler Rogers is not. He is fooling guys just like he did before. The problem is that he doesn't get a log of swing and miss, so that increases your bad luck chances for BABIP, like you just said.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Like, if you've watched his outings, you know this, because it's just, it's obvious. Like, he's not getting hit hard. It's just the little dinker doinkers, like, going up the third baseline, and people can't get to him. And people are just getting on base. And then it's like one that just barely gets through a hole or whatever. It's, he's just having a run of bad luck. It's like it's a Darren Ruff at the beginning of the season type of situation. I'm fine with him.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, although, do you ever think that Taylor calls him and is like, "Hey man, just switch the other arm and start pitching overhand, dude. It's working out really well for me."
Oh man. Anyway.
That guy's insane for the Padres.
He is, man. Okay, well, I think that's going to do it, because I know that Willie and I got to get out of here. I got some work. Mm-hmm. You got to get your stuff moved. But I want to thank everyone for joining us live. We had a good turnout today. Thanks for the comments. I know I didn't get everyone on there. But coming up, 4 against LA, 3 against Chicago, including the Will Clark number retirement ceremony, which I'm going to try and get credentials to and cover that. And then 4 against the Dodgers again, back at Oracle. So kind of a nice little rough stretch here, but I think it's going to be a good test for the Giants. You can follow us collectively on Twitter at TortureCast, individually at ChadK21 for myself, at Willie Dills for my friend Willie, and of course at 2OutHits with the number 2 for Eric, who is currently moving to a different state to live and take up a new job. So we're really excited for our friend. Make sure you reach out and say congratulations to him. You can email us at TortureCast@gmail.com. Of course, find this on Facebook. And find everything at TortureCast.com. So that's about it. Willie, you got anything else?
No, I just want to bring up, if you are a golfer and you suck at it, check out the MGA, the Mediocre Golf Association, MGATour.com. We're in the middle of our 2022 season, and things are going pretty good. I'm having a great time being back in San Francisco playing with those guys. And there's probably, if you're not in the Bay Area, there's probably a chapter near you. So check it out.
Definitely. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining. And we'll see you in about a week or week and a half. Until then, take care. Go Giants. Ah, boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.